Metcast, Tuesday, July 28th, 2015. Hey, Mech Geeks, it's time for your Metcast, the show for Mech Geeks by Mech Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the studio under the stairs. I think that's what we're going to be calling the Metcast studios now. A little nod to Ewan Rankin, who always makes fun of me. I think I mentioned on the last episode, and we've talked about this before, when I moved houses, I had to find a new studio space. I used to have an extra bedroom. We downsized a little bit, and now I have a walk-in closet that I sort of converted into a studio. Did a little guerrilla studio conversion with some sound dampening and stuff like that. I think it actually works out pretty well, other than, as I mentioned on the last episode, it gets a little warm in here in the summer. But that's good. Keeps the blood pumping, keeps you moving, right? Got a great show for you today. Actually, a show by request. This came in through Twitter, and you'll hear during the episode. Unfortunately, I couldn't remember, and I apologize to you, Gregory. I could not remember who had sent the tweet, but Gregory sent this tweet and asked, hey, are you going to get the Amigos together to talk about Apple Music? And I realized immediately I had not really spoken to Victor Cahiao or David Sparks or Ken Ray about their thoughts on Apple Music, and I thought it was a great idea. So wanted to get those guys in. Greg threw it out there on Twitter. I responded. Then immediately the guys responded and we're like, yeah, we need to make this thing happen. So that is what we're going to be doing in today's episode. I'm also about to head out to Utah for Nerdtacular. That is the conference, the event, the great time that Scott Johnson puts on for the Frog Pants Network. That's his podcast network that he runs. He does a great lineup of shows. Some of my personal favorites, Film Sack, also The Morning Stream with Brian Ibbitt, and just great geek culture stuff. If you haven't checked it out, of course, there's The Instance, which I think started it all, his World of Warcraft podcast. But he's got a whole bunch of shows now. I can't even keep track. He seems like there's a new one every week, and it's great. It's a great network, great people, and just a ton of fun out there. We go and geek out, play board games, hang out, talk about geek culture, comics, video games, all those sorts of things. There's great performers, all kinds of fun stuff, and it's all at Snowbird in Utah in the summer. So we're kind of all around in the same area up on the mountain, and it is great fun. If you ever get a chance to go, please do. If you are there this year, please say hi. Love to see everybody again. It's really, really great time. So I'm looking forward to that. And of course, when I'm out there, I started a couple years ago doing this little, I don't know, bit, segment, whatever you want to call it. We call it What the App Is That? And it is an app discovery thing. I realized that one of the ways that I discover apps, and I really like finding out about apps, is from my friends, finding out what they use. So I thought it would be great if I just sort of walked up to people at the show, said, hey, let me see your iPhone or your iPad. I find an app icon that I don't recognize, and we just ask them about it. And it's turned out to be a great way to discover apps, because more often than not, you're not going to leave stuff on your device that you're really not interested in. There's a few things here and there, but most of the time we find some really great new apps. So looking forward to being able to do those interviews, and we'll be putting that on the Maccast after I get back from Utah next week. But for now, we've got the show for today. We're going to talk all about Apple Music. Before we get into that, I do want to take a quick moment and thank our show sponsor. And today it is Tunnel Bear. You know, I don't know about you, but I'm getting more and more worried about how I use public Wi-Fi. We are using it more often. If you're traveling, if you're just running around town, maybe you're at the local cafe and you're online, that is a potential risk. And we've had more and more incidents of identity theft and credit card theft and all these sorts of things going on. And this could be one of those areas where you are exposed. And Tunnel Bear is an app that can help out with that. It's a really simple app that lets you browse privately when you're online. It can also help you get around blocked websites. It's an easy to use VPN service, virtual private network, with over 5 million users. They encrypt all your traffic so it can't be seen whether It's by the guy at the coffee shop in the corner. You know, that guy sitting over there, he's got the laptop. You're not really sure what he's doing. Or even governments or ISPs or corporations. If you just want to browse privately and not have to worry about that stuff, Tunnel Bear is a great way to go. They have mobile, desktop, and browser apps for iOS, Mac, and Chrome, so they make it really easy to secure anything that you're going to be browsing on. And you can literally turn it on or off with a single click. Actually, one thing I was really impressed about when I tried Tunnel Bear was how easy it was to install and set up. I mean, literally, with downloading the app and getting it installed on my machine, I was up and using the VPN service within minutes. I kid you not. And that was very impressive. You can tunnel to 14 different countries. It allows you to browse the internet as if you're in those countries, so that it helps when you're trying to get around blocked websites and those sorts of things. And if you listen to the MacCast, you probably know that one thing I'm always concerned about when it comes to VPN is, who are you running your traffic through? So it's great that, you know, you can protect from the person that's sitting there at the coffee shop, but when you choose a VPN provider, you are going through their network. So all your traffic goes through their network. So it has to be somebody you can trust. And Tunnel Bear, what I loved about their service when I looked it up is their privacy policy and the transparency of everything that they're doing. You can go on their website, tunnelbear.com/MacCast. You can check this out for yourself, but they have a plain English privacy policy and terms of service that you can understand and you can read. And they really only collect the minimum amount of information needed. They don't want your information. They want as little of it as possible. And they're very upfront about that in their policy. Also, when you sign up for the service, and their pricing is amazing. They're free up to 500 megabytes per month. So you can use the service for free. And if that's all you need, then that's great. But if you need more than that, their plans are really affordable. You can get unlimited plans starting at $4.99 a month or just $49.99 for a year. And that includes up to 3 computers or devices. So you can get online with VPN, secure your connection for everything that you own. So I want you to try it out now. Just go to tunnelbear.com/MacCast. Give it a shot. I think you're really going to like it. And a big thank you to Tunnel Bear for their support of the MacCast. So what do you say we sit down and talk with the guys, with the amigos, about Apple Music? I just realized, though, too, that some of you may be new to the MacCast and you might not be familiar with the amigos. So let me introduce you to them and give you a little bit of a backstory. So I've been doing the MacCast for over 10 years now. And in that time, I've become friends with a lot of podcasters. So I guess there's really a lot of amigos. But three of us, Ken Ray from macOS Ken podcast, and Victor Cahiao, who used to do a podcast called the Typical Mac User Podcast. Actually, he started out as the Typical PC User Podcast and switched over to the Mac and became Typical Mac User. We became pretty good friends, and every once in a while, we decided we would get together on each other's shows and just have a conversation about various things, because we each were sort of solo podcasters doing our own thing. And it was nice once in a while to get some friends together and just have a chat about technology or what was going on in the Apple and Mac community. And that grew over the years, and we've done them on and off. And Victor took a break from podcasting for a while, and so we brought in David Sparks from the Mac Power Users podcast as our third amigo. And then Victor is now back into podcasting. So he's returned, and so now there is four of us. So we simply call these episodes the Amigos episodes. Get together, talk about some sort of topic, and of course today it is Apple Music. So I hope you enjoy this. Here is the Amigos chatting about Apple's latest music offering. All right, we are back for another Amigos show. I have the guys with me here going around the table. We'll just introduce everybody. I'm going to go in order of your images that I have on Skype. So that means, David, you get to go first. Hey, David, how's it going?
First in, last out, something like that. I don't know. I'm doing great.
Yeah?
I'm doing great.
I'm sensing a theme.
Yeah. And that's Ken. He's already jumping in, so he's next anyway. So perfect timing, Ken. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Thank you very much for having me, Adam.
Hey, thanks for doing this, guys. And Victor Cahiao. Hey, Victor.
Hey, it's great to be here talking to you guys.
Yeah.
Miss you.
Let me, can I, before we even get to anything?
Yes.
This is the first Four Amigos episode.
I think we've done, I thought
we had three Amigos before, but then one of us has always had to bow out and the other one's been there. And I want to say this is like the first time that all four of us are actually, all four of us are hanging at once.
Amigos,
I
think you're assemble. Right. Amigos assemble.
Amigos assemble. That's the email that I sent out. You know, and there's been some debate, like, do we need to do something that's more four appropriate?
Well, I suggested Musketeers.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the three Musketeers, but it's always like the three Musketeers and D'Artagnan. It's not, you know, it wasn't the four Musketeers, I think. Could do the seven dwarves minus three. Just gets crazy after a while.
The odd couple squared.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I guess Cuatro Amigos works too.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, I'm glad you guys joined me because we had a call out on Twitter from a listener, and I should have had his Twitter handle in front of me. Unfortunately, I don't because I didn't do any good planning for this. But he asked, he said, hey, I want to hear a Amigos show about Apple Music. And I realized I personally was very curious about your guys' opinion of Apple Music, because I've been talking about it. I'm sure you guys have been talking about it on your respective podcasts, but I'm just really, really curious because I personally am really enjoying it, and I don't know about you guys. So, David, I mean,
yeah,
what's your initial impression, or what was your initial impression of Apple Music?
Just a little background is I signed up for Beats when they first started. I was interested in the curation kind of thing, actually before Apple bought them. And went ahead and continued my subscription right up until the big transition. So I was already sold on streaming music, and I like what Apple's done. I'm not, you know, there's some things about it, and I'm sure we'll talk about it, that I'm not happy with in the system. But in general, the idea that I can combine a streaming service with my existing library and playlists and existing music is really great. I mean, I already knew Beats was good, but when I combined Beats with my existing library, it got even better. And that's something that surprisingly I didn't expect.
That's interesting. Yeah, I tried Beats as well, but I don't think I liked it as much as maybe. So you stuck with it, Beats up until Apple Music.
Yeah, I did. I like the curation element of it, and I have discovered a lot of new artists over the last year. So I'm sold.
Yeah, I didn't find Beats as I know Apple's built on top. I'm pretty sure positive Apple Music is built on top of Beats, but it to me seems better, and maybe it is that thing that you were talking about where, you know, once it's integrated with the stuff I already have, maybe it's a little bit better. But I didn't find the recommendations and curation when I just had Beats to be as good as what I've sort of been experiencing with Apple Music. So did you notice a difference?
Yeah. I mean, this is the problem. I've got some really great playlists that I've developed over the years. In my family, we all have diverse music tastes. We have nearly 25,000 music tracks in our music library, and it ranges in all different genres. And so I've very carefully, like, I've rated over the years my music, and I have these great smart playlists that says, you know, play me all West Coast jazz with 4 stars or better, things like that. And I really like going to those playlists, but I also like going out and finding new things. And before, to do that, I had to go to 2 different apps, or even worse, on my Mac, I had to go to iTunes, which is kind of a pig as a software goes, and then I had to go to Chrome browser because I needed Flash to make Beats work. Yeah. So it was nutty. And now I've got everything in one place. And that's one of the takeaways after using this for a while, is that, you know what, putting everything in one place is really great. And I understand that there's other streaming services and they don't have that advantage because they're not the same company. But whether you call it unfair advantage or not, it makes a better experience for me.
Yeah. So next in line, the person I really wanted to find out his thoughts on is you, Ken, because anybody who's listened to us for a while knows that you have really wanted this service for a streaming music service from Apple for a long time.
Yeah. Well, what I wanted was a good streaming music service. And I got one in Spotify. And what's interesting is each one sort of graduates a little bit.
Right.
So Rhapsody was great for a long time because, you know, we pretty much had nothing else. And then Spotify came along. What I really liked about Spotify, more than anything else, well, there were two things. First of all, they weren't jerks about your mobile devices. For people who haven't used Rhapsody, so $9.99 a month, you could get your desktop, of course, and then you could stream on a mobile device. And so that's great. So one day I'm walking around with my iPhone listening to Rhapsody, and I decide, well, I'm going to be cooking, so I want to listen to Rhapsody on my iPad. And so I went to listen to Rhapsody on my iPad, and it said, oh, sorry, you're actually already using Rhapsody on your iPhone. And so it didn't say iPhone. It said you're already using a mobile device. So you actually had to go in and disable the other mobile device before you could use this one. Now, Spotify also only lets you use one mobile device, but, I mean, they're smart about it. They let you use one mobile device at a time. So, like, if I'm listening on my iPad and then I start listening on my iPhone, the one on my iPad dies and the one on my iPhone starts. And there's no, like, I don't have to do any sort of, you know, go away, come back, you know, all that stuff. And of course, what's great about, you know, Apple Music is, I mean, it's even less it's even less cumbersome than that. The cool thing about Spotify, in addition to the multiple mobile devices, was the fact that I could, you know, see what my friends were listening to. If we were all signed in through Facebook, and if we had linked that through our Spotify accounts, or linked our Facebook through Spotify, whatever, then I could see what my friends were listening to. And that sort of became my recommendation engine. I was never a Pandora fan. I know, you know, there are some people who love Pandora, but it never felt like the station that I started actually continued with the kind of music that I wanted it to. And part of the problem, too, is if I want to listen to Morrissey, I want to listen to Morrissey. I don't want to listen to somebody that some computer thinks sounds like Morrissey. And at the same time, Apple's recommendation stuff, the things that it's giving me in the For You thing, do seem to be hitting when they're applicable. They right. hit really well. I mean, sometimes they don't. Like, I chose people who listen to iChart Radio have heard me talk about this. I chose the Pixies as one of my big bands when I was setting it up. You know, it's like, oh, I like the Pixies. I clicked on it twice because I really like the Pixies. And still to this day, Apple's like, oh, here's an intro to the Pixies. And I'm saying, well,
right.
maybe give me deep cuts on the Pixies, because I did not even name Squeeze and it's trying to give me deep cuts on Squeeze, which actually probably is something I need, because, you know, I've got two of their albums and, of course, the singles, which everybody owns, I think. It's required by law that you have that one. So deep cuts on Squeeze makes sense to me. But, you know, the Pixies, it's like, oh, you say you like the Pixies. Well, do you know Monkey Gone to Heaven? Well, of course I know Monkey Gone to Heaven. It's anyway.
I get your point. Every once in a while, it is a little off.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know the trick on that too, right?
No. Well, you keep hitting like or
no,
keep
no,
hitting,
no. You can no. actually in the For You section. A lot of people don't know this. I can only figure out how to do it on iOS. Listeners to my show will know this, but for everybody else who hasn't heard this before, if you tap and hold on the artwork in the mm-hmm. playlist for you on iOS, you will get an option that says "I don't like this recommendation."
Really?
Yes.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that. See, that's the thing that's embarrassing to me. So you say that, you know, I've wanted this for a while. Mostly what I wanted was for Apple to go ahead and get into it early so they could go ahead and own it. Because right. I assumed that they were going to do a better job. I mean, they are exceedingly late to the game. Now, what's cool is, I mean, it's, you know, they got half a billion iPhones walking around. And granted, all of those won't be able to run iOS 8.4. Right. But a lot of them will. I mean, Tim Cook has already said they have millions and millions of people trying it out. What's amazing to me is does anybody remember how many paid users Spotify has right now? I want to say it's like 19 million. Is that correct?
Yeah, I want to say it's about a quarter. I think three quarters are free and a quarter. So if you know their total, you can kind of do the math on that. That's the stat I remember.
The last numbers I remember is, well, I can't, okay. Let's say it's 19 million, just for the sake of argument, because it doesn't seem like it was much more than that if it was more than that.
Ken, in the Spotify page, it says they have over 20 million subscribers and 75 million active users.
Okay. So 20 million. Okay, cool. Right before Apple Music came out, I want to say it was Gene Munster who said, if they could make the Spotify numbers, and that seems incredibly unlikely. And I'm thinking about it now, and I'm thinking, how did we stand before this and think that Apple would not be able to hit those numbers? I don't think they'll hit it tomorrow. I don't think they'll hit it in the first quarter. And I don't know how soon they're going to tell us how many paid subscribers they have. But I don't see how they're not going to be able to get 20 million easy, just by virtue of the fact that they're there. Right? As long as they don't hose people's music collections the way they hose Jim Dalrymple's collection.
Yeah, we're going to get into that a little bit later, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's embarrassing to me, though, is I wanted Apple to get into it early. I haven't put Apple Music through all of its paces. And part of that, I think, is because I've gotten so excited about the stuff that they brought to it. I will forget about Beats 1 and I will go back to Beats 1 and I'll forget about it again and I'll go back to it again. But in just the maybe 4 or 5 total hours that I've spent listening to Beats 1, I've done some really interesting music discovery. And yeah. From that, I've either built radio stations of stuff that I just want to hear this, or playlists based on, you know, a song that I heard on there that's been kind of interesting. I had a listener write to me and say that the secret ingredient or the secret weapon for Apple Music is Trent Reznor. Mm-hmm. He's like, you know, I've tried Spotify's playlists and they're fine. I've tried Pandora and it's okay. But Trent Reznor has hired people to go in and make playlists. And those, I mean, I can hear what that person heard, which is kind of interesting. And that's honestly sort of where I've gotten stuck. I've built, I think, from scratch, 2 playlists in Apple Music. It's not as easy as it is to build a playlist in Spotify. But what's weird is I'm not really missing that much because I'm the music discovery that's happening as a result of Apple Music has been surprising to
someone
me.
Someone else now, building the playlist for you.
In a way, yeah. Which is odd because that was always my argument against Pandora. You heard me say it a minute ago. When I want to hear this, this is what I want to hear. And yet I'm finding now that I'm more open to hearing somebody else's idea, and maybe it's because it's somebody else as opposed to something else.
Well, and I think there's something to be said about someone who knows the music and knows how to sort of match the things mm-hmm. in a playlist in a way that makes sense. The problem with Pandora always was they wanted to use an algorithm. They did that whole music DNA thing, and it was right. more like, this song sounds like that song. But when you really think about when you're making a mix or you're making a playlist, more often than not, you don't want all the same sounding stuff together, right? You want to mix things that sort of complement or maybe even contrast in some cases with each other.
Yeah, right. I mean, there is that indefinable human element, unless the definition is because it's human. I mean, I pick music between segments on iChart Radio, mm-hmm. and I'm using like just basic production music that I bought, you know, off a royalty-free album on iTunes. And yet for a while, I was getting email from people saying, it's like you're really thinking about the music before you go into the next segment. And, you know, the secret there is I am. But, I mean, there's something about having a human do it, right? I mean, having somebody listen to it and go, oh, you know, it'd be great here.
Yeah.
And there is just, I mean, until we get, you know, actual real live manufactured intelligence, you know, it's right. something that's not going to do quite as well as a person. Let me say one more thing, because I know there okay. are other,
I, yeah, I want to get to Victor
as well. Yes, absolutely. What I don't know is if all of this stuff that's happening with me now, as far as the playlists and Beats 1 and all of that, mm-hmm. is something that Apple is actually doing better, or if it's just that they reignited an interest in music for me.
Yeah, fair.
You know what I mean? Because yeah. we're talking about music so much now that I don't know if it's like, somebody, I can't remember who, but somebody was telling me, oh, Shelley Brisbane was telling me she doesn't have an Apple Watch, but she's actually exercising more now because she's hearing all of her friends who talk about Apple Watch be all excited about the fitness stuff that they're doing. And so even though it's not tapping her on the wrist and saying, stand up, which by the way, guys, we all have to do in 1 minute as we record this, even though it's not tapping her. Oh, that's right. That's another thing. Oh, okay. Even though it's not tapping her on the wrist and saying you have to do this, you know, just that buzz around it has ignited something in her as far as fitness. Same thing may be going for music. I mean, it's possible that this seems so incredible to me because everybody's talking about whether or not it's incredible.
Sure.
So I you know, check back with me in 6 months and see who I'm giving $10 each month.
That's a very fair point. There's that tap. So Victor, I know because we talked a little bit pre-show, I know sort of the end of this, but just your initial impressions like of Apple Music when it was launched back on the, 30th?
Sure. First, let me say, I think it's great that Apple's finally gotten into this space. It's about time. And I think it's a huge win for a lot of people who enjoy discovering music and having a huge library. Mm-hmm. I also really applaud Apple for what they're doing in paying the artist and their formulas for that. I think they are taking a huge step in the right direction. So I think that's great. That being said, I did try Apple Music and was using it until I think the 20th is when I decided to turn it off, both in iOS and in iTunes. And I want to tell you why. I think music is a really personal thing, and each person has to decide for themselves what they value. Mm-hmm. And for me, I wasn't, and I'm not currently, a person who sits around and plays music while I'm sitting around doing something or in the car or that. That's just not me. I listen to music in a very active manner. Maybe I'm learning a song from my saxophone, or I'm sitting down specifically because I want to hear a Coltrane album that I haven't heard in 2 years. So it's very specific. Mm-hmm. So because of that, I have a music library that's very limiting. It's only less than 3,000 songs. And for being a musician, people might go, whoa, but that's just the facts. I like what I like, and I'm kind of maybe old or maybe just stuck in what I like. So for me, there isn't going to be a discovery. I'm not looking to discover. If I'm going to discover, it'll be from friends of mine who I trust and will give me those kinds of recommendations on the side. I do pay for Match because I want to have music in the cloud, mm-hmm. and it lets me stream, so that's great. But for me, it's just not the right thing. I think it's a great tool, and it's going to do nothing but improve. But for me, it just didn't fit. The For You part, that was kind of cool. It was giving me some good suggestion based on my taste and so on. And it was great for, you know, a few weeks to go back and reminisce and listen to some old records and songs that I don't own. That was really cool. But again, I'm not a person who's out there sharing songs or sharing playlists in social media. That's not me. I think the family pricing is outstanding. I think the pricing in general is great. I'm sure we'll talk later about some of the nightmares that come along with family sharing if you don't do it right. Mm-hmm. But overall, it's just not the right fit for me today. That could change in the future.
Do you use any, or have you used any other music service, or is it just the sort of thing where, like you're saying, it's just you have your library and this is the stuff you like and that's all you really need?
Yep. If I want to discover music, I will listen to the radio portion or the Apple Music radio portion, mm-hmm. That's still being offered, and they have some lists that are, I believe, are curated based upon genres. And
yeah, they have radio stuff that you can get all the radio stuff for free still.
So. Exactly. So that's what I'll use for discovery. I also use Google Play for discovery at times. But no, I have not subscribed to any other service. I think I was on Spotify for a few months years ago when it first launched. But I think I left it for the same reason. So that's my story.
Let me ask you this, because you said you turned it off. So you went into iTunes and actually flipped the checkbox that says turn off Apple Music.
That's correct. So not the one that says iCloud.
Right.
Music, but the one that says Apple Music.
You need that for Match. Right. And I want to get into that in a little bit. That goes a little bit into the whole Jim Dalrymple story that we'll get into a little bit later. But what I wanted to ask was, so when you turn off Apple Music, and I probably should have done, I just haven't done this since it came out, does it leave, it still leaves radio and Connect in place, correct?
It leaves radio. I do not think it leaves Connect, thank goodness. So, yeah, I don't think it leaves Connect. It leaves radio and gives you those types of options. Beats 1 is right there in front of you. But I do not believe that. Oh, you know what? I just lied. Connect, unfortunately, is there.
Yeah, you get some limited Connect functionality. I think, you know, that's so that the artist, that's probably some part of my suspicion is that's part of the music deal with, you know, trying to get artists on there and making sure that they have a lot of exposure. I think some people are not going to really appreciate that. It sounds like, you know, that's not something you're probably interested in either, and you're kind of stuck with. And that's one of the, you know, that's one of the negative sides about Apple Music, I think, is it is sort of forced on people a little bit.
Yeah, well, I do have, if we get to it, I have opinions about Beats and Connect as well.
When you say it's forced on people, though, how do you mean? Because I'll be honest, I've checked Connect, I think, maybe twice, and otherwise I forget it's there.
Well, it's forced in the way that Apple forces their iOS apps on us, you know, the undeletable, unremovable. Yeah. You know, it's sort of like if you have iTunes, you have to have Connect. You don't really get a choice to sort of hide it or take it out of the tabs or...
Yeah.
Well, you can hide it in the iOS device if you go into Preferences Music, but not... I haven't found that in iTunes. Somebody knows how, please let me know.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and there was also the trick of, you know, you can use the parental controls, I think, to say don't allow Connect.
Oh, yeah. I'll try that.
Well, the only problem, I mean, if you set parental controls like that, though, then are you actually limiting yourself on other things?
No,
like,
parental controls are completely granular, so you can go in and only turn on leave everything else on and only turn off Kinect.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
It's kind of a weird way to do it, though. You know, it's sort of like you're parental controlling yourself, but only with one little thing. But I wanted to get back to, because Ken, you talked a little bit about the curated stuff. I'm curious to get Victor and David's opinion. Maybe start with you, David, on, you hinted a little bit at the curation, but you mentioned, I mean, you guys have a huge library and you got your whole family on it. How's the curation working for you guys in like the For You section?
It's fine. I don't think I'm as discriminating as Ken is, you know, listening, because you've been through all the various services. And I think one of the things about me is the first, you know, I had played with some of the other streaming services, but never really, for one reason or another, caught on with them, you know, beyond mm-hmm. the trial period. And with Beats, when it got there, I just liked that it would give me these great playlists. And sometimes I just want to listen to some new music. And, you know, once you set it up, it seems like it does a pretty decent job of doing that for you. So for the last year and a half, I've gotten the habit of saying, I'm working and I want some music. I'll just say, what are the suggested playlists for me? Pick one, press play, and just get to work. And unlike Victor, I actually work all the time with music in the background. So it's like, it's really great. So, but I don't feel like I have really been, you know, comparing those playlists to the other services. But what I can say is that the playlists I'm getting from Beats and now from Apple Music have been really good for me. I mean, it does come up with lists that I'm interested in. It's a little pop heavy because my music interests are really not that much with pop music. But I do listen to enough current artists, you know, because my kids introduce me to music too. I want to learn, you know, I want to listen to what they're listening to and kind of get an idea for it. So I can see why it's doing it, because I'm not just like completely shutting that stuff down. But it is a little pop heavy, and I think the whole service is kind of pop heavy. I mean, Beats One, but you know, that's frankly where the money and most of the listeners are. But just, you know, when you get to the stuff I like, I mean, just yesterday I got a recommended playlist of songs that had been recorded with John Coltrane and Miles Davis together. I mean, somebody put that playlist together, and Beats was smart enough to say, I bet David would like this. And you know what? I did. So, it's been great, and I'm really quite happy with that stuff. And I still have continued that practice where when I want to listen to music, a lot of times I just go into the For You tab and pick an interesting playlist and press play. Yeah.
Two things you mentioned there that I have found similar. You know, the recommendations have in general been very, very good for me. There's one area but every once in a while there's one that's like really off. And it sounds like Ken, you had that experience, and David, you've had that experience. And I'm not really sure what that is or what causes that. I have a theory in my case. So when I went through the setup process, I specifically told it, you know, pop the bubble for country, because I'm just not a fan of most country music. There's a few things that I like, but it's just one of those genres that's just not really for me. Mm-hmm. Consequently, I do love singer-songwriter stuff and acoustic stuff. And so every once in a while, I'm getting a country playlist recommended to me in the For You section. It drives me batty. It's like, there's no way I'm going to listen to that. But I think what's happening is I think it's because, you know, I pick and favorite a lot of tracks that are singer-songwriter acoustic stuff. It's mixing in country stuff for me, which I found very interesting.
One of the things I did was I went through and made a smart playlist of all my 4-star better rated music mm-hmm. across the board. And then I selected it all and hit Command I to, you know, show information, and then hearted it all. You know, you heart or favorite it, you know, because it's kind of it's a binary. Is it, you know, it's a one or a zero. Do you heart it or not?
Right.
As I understand, that helps inform the playlists. But a lot of this is so much under the covers, we're not really sure. But I've been doing that, and it seems like it's improved the playlist a bit.
Yeah. And the other since you mentioned the heart thing, I just want to mention this real quick, because I think it's important. People don't get this, and this is a difference between some of the other services. So a lot of times, like other services like Spotify, because they're using computer algorithms to sort of build their playlists, hearting or liking things on a service like that would potentially influence, you know, exactly the kind of music that was going into a playlist or how those playlists were being built by the computer. And not so much of what's getting recommended to you, but specifically the mix of those. And I think we commented earlier on that, you know, sometimes the mix of those playlists on the other services just seem like they're off, right? Or too homogenized or, you know, something. So one nice thing about Apple Music is that you are sort of free to heart that stuff, because really it's more just defining a profile of you and the sort of kinds of music that you like. But the individual playlists are still, because they're human curated, are still going to be mixed and matched in a way that makes a lot more sense. So you're not going to have like this weird playlist where suddenly, you know, you've got hard rock and then some jazz thing. And, you know what I mean? Like the playlists are built in a way that they sort of go together. And that's not influenced by your hearting or liking something.
I will say, though, so there was some radio station that I started based on probably... I'm still really into EDM lately, and I don't know why. It's kind of surprising to me, and I feel a little bit old for it, but I'm still kind of into EDM lately. And the thing is, for a while, I was really, in the first month, I guess, that we've had Apple Music so far, I was really liking fairly beats-heavy stuff. And the problem now is I apparently liked so much of that that I'm no longer getting anything discoverable on whatever radio station that was. Because, you know, the radio station obviously is not human curated. I would love it if there were a guy sitting there, you know, someplace in Cupertino going, okay, you just listened to this. I'll probably like this thing next. Let's go ahead and get that in quick.
Right.
That's still sort of the computer thing. And I found that I have now sort of boxed myself into a kind of music that I really do enjoy. But it was sort of like in the midst of all the other music. It's like, that in particular is hitting me. And apparently I hearted so many of those things that now iTunes is like, okay, we know what this guy likes. Just fire up that bass drum.
I thought you still on the radio side still had to do the play more like this, don't play this sort of algorithm. But
really?
Yeah.
Because I thought the whole point of liking it was them saying that actually does influence the music that they're able to serve you going forward.
Yeah. Well, I think for the For You, yeah, but I didn't know that it influenced radio. But I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of questions about that. Sorry, David, but I had cut you off. So
I think you guys are right. There's a mystery to this. And frankly, I don't understand why it's not better at looking at, like, a library like mine. You can see that I've played certain tracks thousands of times.
Right.
And you can see that I've rated some 5 stars and some 1 star. And why can't you just grab all of that data and just, you know, stick it through your sausage factory and give me better recommendations? And maybe they're doing it, but I get the impression they're not. That's something I think I'd like to see them improve at, frankly.
I was never big on rating music. Was there some sort of issue with ratings and stuff in the transition? I thought some people were complaining about they're losing ratings or the ratings not sort of being real obvious anymore. Like the heart is sort of taken over for the star ratings. Have you experienced that, David? I didn't really notice that being the case, but I thought I had seen some people sort of complaining about that.
They're still there. I mean, you can sell ratings. I didn't lose any data. I'd read a couple cases of people losing data in the first couple days, and I don't know the story behind that. Never really researched it. It's a different criteria than when you heart it or favorite it. As I understand it, the favoriting actually does go into the mix in terms of determining what to feed you, whereas ratings is just something local on your computer that doesn't really get in the mix. And that's kind of my point on why doesn't it. I mean, and I get that a lot of people don't use ratings.
Right.
But I do, you know, and having ratings for me is magic, especially when you like someone like Victor, who's going to listen to his own music, and you're going to use iTunes Match. When you rate everything, you can create smart playlists on the go that that give you a small micro version of your library, and it's very easily created at any time. So, I think there's a lot of good reasons to do it, but how come Apple Music isn't taking advantage of it?
Yeah, it's not those things aren't integrated either, which has been a frustration for me. I've noticed if you heart something sort of as you're listening to streaming stuff and For You and things like that, you can't sort of I don't think that gets pulled down. Like if I were to later say add this, you know, track to my library, does that heart get pulled down in there? You know?
So my understanding is that the rating portion is around. It's going to stick around even in iOS 9. Uh-huh. And that the rating is for music that you already own. the heart paradigm is for music that is not yet in your collection.
Right.
So what I would think would happen is that once you bought it, then it would come into your collection and you could do, like David said, your own curation by using the star system in order to make your playlist, etc. That's what I've grokked from what I've read.
Well,
just to clarify that, it's not just buying it. If you're renting it as well.
Right.
I mean, if you're subscribed to Apple Music and you say, add this to my library, you still have the ability to do the full rating.
You can do rating and hearts. The weird thing for me is I wish that, because somebody asked me, hey, you know, I've hearted a bunch of stuff as I've been listening along. How can I see all of the things that that are in Apple Music that I've added hearts to? And my immediate thought was, oh, I bet you could build a smart playlist, right? And just say, you know, show me everything that I've hearted on Apple Music. Well, you can, and there is a heart option in the smart playlist, but it only is for local stuff that you've said, add to my library, and then hearted, unfortunately. It won't, like, dig out into the iCloud library. And this actually may be a good point to transition into this whole Jim Dalrymple thing. Because there's a lot of confusion about, you know, sort of how Apple Music works and how it relates to the iCloud Music Library. And I don't know if people have been following along with what happened with Dalrymple, but does anybody have a really good synopsis? Because I was actually really a little bit confused by it. I think I sort of understand it now. And there's like two pieces he wrote over on loopinsight.com if people want to check it out. But basically, the gist of what I understand was he has a very large music collection. He has a lot of stuff that he's acquired over the years that was in his library that he used the and he has iTunes Match as well. So he used the iTunes Match service and the Apple Music service. A lot of that stuff was pushed up into the iCloud library. And then something went wrong with, I think he was trying to correct the data, metadata or something like that, and at some point had sort of turned off iCloud Music Library and turned it back on and maybe deleted some things at some point. And long story short, he lost, I think, some music. He was able to get some back, but, you know, it was just really confusing in terms of the interface. And I do think that, you know, iTunes Match, Apple Music, and just iTunes in general, Apple has created quite a mess for themselves. And I think, you know, if someone like Jim Dalrymple is going to get confused and have this happen to him, you know, how are the rest of us supposed to fare?
Yeah, I didn't really, because I read the article too, and I use both iTunes Match, or at least temporarily I'm still using it, and Apple Music.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually went through and spent quite a bit of time because, like Jim, I have a big library saying, well, did I lose anything? You know, that's the first reaction.
Right? I did the same
about me,
too.
You know? And I couldn't find anything missing. And I honestly, either. It sounds to me like something went wrong. And obviously it did. But, you know, I don't know how big of an issue this is. I haven't heard it from that many people.
I had another listener who had this happen to them in a way. And so here's the deal. And I don't think this is anything new. This is my understanding of it. And you guys can chime in and tell me if you think I'm wrong. But my understanding of what happened is that, again, he had this large library. First and foremost, and he admits this in the article, he didn't have a backup of a lot of the music that he ultimately lost, which anybody who listens to my show and probably your guys' show as well know we drive home backup. I mean, if you've ripped a bunch of stuff into your local iTunes library, you should have a full backup of that. And also all your purchase stuff. That's another thing. A lot of people don't back up their purchased music. And I've had listeners get in trouble because Apple's licensing sometimes goes away. So you may have purchased something, you know, 5-10 years ago, and Apple may or may not have renegotiated the license of that. Sometimes they get a different version. You know, the labels change and it's a different publication or something, you know. So things have happened where people have lost stuff because they assume Apple has a copy, but they may not have the copy that you bought. So regardless, you should always be backing up all of your stuff that you ripped. So that was one thing that Jim had apparently not done. He had some music that he didn't have local backups of. He just sort of had that. And so then he turned on Match and Music. And when you do that, all of your music goes up into what Apple calls the iCloud Music Library. And that's fine because you have your local copies and you have, and it doesn't all necessarily go up, right? They have the whole matching thing. So it's going to try and look at your music library and it's going to try and match what's, you know, in Apple's music library or in the iTunes Match library. And if it's there, it just sort of puts it into your iCloud music library and says, okay, you have access to this music. And then anything that it doesn't, right, we know that it will upload that into your iCloud music library. And I think another thing that Jim did was he had stuff that went up there, and at some point on his Mac, he was trying to troubleshoot it, and he turned off iCloud music library, but he didn't, and then deleted the local copies. You know, when you turn it off, it says, do you want to keep your local copies? Do you want to delete the stuff that's in iCloud? And I think my guess is what happened is he said, okay, go ahead and delete the stuff that is in iCloud. And he didn't have a local version of that. It was only existing in iCloud. So then when he went to turn it back on, right, the iCloud copy was gone. And I think that's ultimately how he lost the tracks that he lost.
Except that he says in the article that Apple told him that the stuff was actually, that it was never deleted, that it was still in iCloud.
It's still in iCloud as long as you don't, because you can say, you know, I want you to delete this local copy, but keep the iCloud copy because maybe you're syncing with, you know, iOS devices or something like that. I don't know. But the ultimate point that people need to understand, I think, you know, because we can only speculate at what happened. I mean, what makes the most logical sense to me was he didn't have a local copy. He turned off iCloud. He told iCloud they could delete the iCloud copy and then boom, everything's gone. And people ask me all the time, hey, if I get iTunes Match or now if I get Apple Music and it matches all my stuff and it unlocks it in the iCloud library, can I delete my local copy to save space? Because a lot of people want to save space on their drive. And it's like, no, do not do that. You don't want to delete your local copy, or at the very least, make a backup of your entire, you know, a couple backups of the entire thing. And then, yeah, you could, but just know if the only copy is in the iCloud library, and you ever turn it off, or, you know, get rid of the service, turn it off, or, you know, say delete that iCloud copy, that's gone. You know, you don't have a backup unless you've implicitly made that. So that's just the thing I want people to understand. It's like, just because it went up into Apple's cloud, it doesn't mean, you know, that that's a backup. It's not, you know, it's a space to have your music so that you can stream it to your other devices, so you can sync it to your other devices, but it's not a backup service.
You know what this whole thing makes me wonder, actually? How far are we from having Apple Music turn into something like Napster or Morpheus? Not that you can actually steal the thing and own it, but here's the thing. Jim Dalrymple has all this stuff, right, that's amazing and that probably a lot of us have never heard, but we might be interested in if we had it. David's got some stuff that I've never heard. I don't know how I would find it in, you know, iTunes or whatever, or maybe he's got some stuff. Look, I've got a mix that I made years ago. It was a mashup that I made years ago of Britney Spears' Slave for You and Ministry's Every Day is Halloween. And I made it for a couple of friends of mine, and you'll never find that anywhere. But wouldn't it be interesting if I mentioned that now, and because it's in my iTunes, you know, Match or my iTunes in the cloud, if people listening to it said, wow, that sounds really cool, I'm going to go look for it. And because I've got it up there, and maybe I've marked it a certain way, so yeah, sure, I'll share this. I mean, we're all paying the record labels anyway, right? The labels are now getting, you know, $10 a month from us for the people who are actually going to sign up for and keep using Apple Music. I mean, at what point does me losing a particular song not become an issue anymore? Not only because Apple's got the label sanctioned version, but because we're all paying into this royalty thing. That now that one dead show that I've never actually been able to get that one song from because my tape of it is bad, somebody right out there has to have it. And so even if it's not like, well, David has it and he's willing to share it with you, but more like, here's Apple going, here is the library. This is like the library at Alexandria as far as music is concerned, because not only do we have the stuff that we've sanctioned or the labels have sanctioned, but here's all this other stuff too.
That got uploaded.
Yeah, but you're still only streaming it. You're not actually, I mean, you can make it available for offline, but you don't have to worry about, because, I mean, the problems with Morpheus and of course, Napster were twofold. First of all, you were stealing, and second, people were actually uploading corrupted files that could end up infecting your computer.
Yeah.
You know, Apple would obviously take care of that, but, I mean, that's the last pain point, right? I mean, I guess the last pain point there is, so I don't have the physical file anymore, which is cute because there's no physical file. And then the other thing is, and I might lose the physical file. I mean, just make everything available. Is that something that we could actually look toward at some point? And is it something that people would even understand? I mean, how could you say, we got every song, and then people are like, yeah, well, you had 100,000 songs or 1 million songs or 5 million or 20 million or however many. Yeah, I know 20 million was good, but seriously, now we have them all of them.
Well,
yeah, I don't think you're ever going to get there, though. It's just not going to happen. The why licensing, not? The licensing issues, the lawyers.
Hmm.
You know,
I don't. Well, okay.
Yeah,
I'm not sure. Sorry, go ahead, Ken.
No, I'm just thinking through that. I mean, you never were going to get to, you know, variable pricing on iTunes either. You never were going to get to DRM-free music on iTunes either. I was going back, I don't remember where I was talking about this, but I was going back listening to some old shows that I did several years ago. I actually listened to our panel at Jillian's the other night. but one of around that time, DRM-free music was starting to be a thing because Steve Jobs had written about it. And what I didn't remember is Edgar Bronfman Jr. over at, I think, Universal Music. And basically all of the labels started selling DRM-free music except on iTunes. EMI right. was the only one that sold DRM-free on iTunes. And everybody else, it took a very long time, but they got there. And so, I mean, you say you're never going to get there. And I'm thinking, I don't know. Eventually, there might be enough money being made in subscriptions that they go ahead and say, yeah, that's fine. Because it's not something they're getting money for anyway. And so if it ends up, go ahead.
I'm not trying to be, to tear this apart, but it seems to me that it's not just the labels that own music. There's a lot of independent artists out there. I mean, at no point, I think, are we going to get to the point where just everything is available. There's always going to be somebody that doesn't want their music shared. I mean, we're already seeing that with Apple Music now with some high profile artists. I mean, didn't like Prince say, no, you can't use my music in your service? And
yeah, Prince and Neil Young.
And Neil Young pulled everything from everybody.
Yep.
Yeah.
And
which I want to say Prince did as well, right?
And I mean, you still have some artists who aren't even on Apple Music, right? The Apple Music library is, 30 million? I think Apple said about 30 million songs, but it's certainly not everything that's in iTunes.
Yeah, the Beatles aren't on Apple Music, which is kind of funny.
Yep. Yeah, Adam, I want to go back for a second to we were talking about Jim's situation. And another situation that George Starcher, the co-host on my show, ran into with iTunes 12.2. And like Dave said earlier, you know, I think iTunes has been a world of hurt in many, many ways. But, you know, during our show, he had mentioned to me he had not opened the new iTunes since it came. And I kind of dared him to. And he did. And sure enough, his library, playlist, everything got completely hosed. And he, of course, had it back up. And it took him several hours to get things back the way that they were. But to me, that didn't happen with everybody. It certainly didn't happen with me. But it just seems to me that Apple had an opportunity here, and perhaps a different take would have been to either make this a beta or separate the services out, you know, the Apple Music service versus iTunes, or for once and for all, fix iTunes. I think there's a lot of opportunity for people like me who are maybe not buying into the Apple Music model, but you could still offer me some suggestions or curation, or you could give me the whole For You section, just like if I had Apple Music, but perhaps limit it to 1 minute of play. So it gives me an opportunity to discover and perhaps purchase music using the old model, not the new.
Yeah. I mean, so, yeah, I know people have said that, you know, doing the transition has messed up their libraries. I did not have that experience. It sounds like, did anybody here have noticed anything go wrong with their library when they turned on Apple Music?
I didn't have any problem. I did wait a day because mm-hmm. I just felt like, let's just give it a day.
Right. Know?
And we talked about it on our show, which has got a pretty big audience. And I have not received a single email from a listener saying that they had a problem. I mean, I acknowledge that some people have run into problems, but I don't think it's huge. Yeah. I mean, there's a whole other issue with the usability and the combination of the software. But in terms of just making the transition, I think it's been pretty smooth.
I've had a few listeners write to me and say that things have gone drastically, terribly, horribly wrong. My thing is, I was telling Mike on iChart Radio the other day, I've been streaming for so long that that's mostly what I do. It's possible that it has removed like half the music I own and I haven't even noticed yet.
Right.
Because I'm too busy playing with other stuff. I did have one smart playlist that actually iTunes, the Genius, made for me a while ago that I absolutely love. And I went to play it the other day and nothing about it is the same as it was. So iTunes actually went in and screwed up something that iTunes did.
Right.
It mixed up the metadata. It's showing me art for one thing, it's playing another, and none of it is the playlist that I had initially. Yeah. But that's one playlist. Now it's possible that it's done that with a lot of other playlists, but again, I'm mostly paying attention to the new stuff.
I think one thing too is it, depending on your collection, I'd be curious, David, if you went back and looked at maybe some of your older tracks. One of my theories of where things may have went wrong is Apple has never respected local metadata very well. Mm. They sort of have this idea that iTunes is the Bible when it comes to song metadata. And I don't think that's always correct. And I think that often is the source of this problem for people. Because I know a lot of people who are very particular about their metadata and their album art and stuff like that. And when you start using Apple services like Match or Apple Music, Apple sort of defaults and says, no, you know, we know what this track is, we know what this song is, and this is what it is. And then if it doesn't match, I've heard of things going horribly wrong in that sort of scenario, you know, where you're pulling something down or it's not matching up. And I have this feeling people, especially with a lot older collections, way back in the day, you know, when you were doing MP3 stuff, I don't think a lot of people did very good metadata, or especially if you've pulled a bunch of stuff from Napster, wherever you got it in the past. And I'm not putting any judgment on that, but a lot of people did, right? You grabbed tons of stuff from all kinds of different weird places, LimeWire and Napster and all these things. And a lot of those tracks have really jacked up metadata. And I think when, you know, a song goes in and Apple tries to match it and it can't find it, it makes a really bad guess, or in some cases will even sort of just override the local metadata and say, nope, this is what this thing is, and say that sort of thing. I don't think it actually goes in and edits it, but it sort of prefers that metadata when it's displaying it, if that makes any sense. So I think in a lot of cases people think things are messed up and when maybe they are or aren't. I don't know. That's just a theory I have.
I have not tested my metadata. I mean, or I have not seen any anomalies yet. I don't know. I guess, you know, I have so many tracks. It's possible, I guess, but I haven't seen anything yet. Have you guys?
Yeah. Well, the biggest thing that I've seen is where I have tracks that are in my library that have sort of not great metadata on them, and Apple can't match them. Right? It can't figure out what they are, and then it sort of just uploads something that I know Apple already has a copy of. So if I go in and fix that metadata and sort of rematch it, and this is with iTunes Match. I haven't tried it with Apple Music yet. You know, if I clean up the metadata, then it can sort of figure it out and fix it. But it's the sort of thing where if I, you know, delete those tracks or mess around with those sometimes, it just gets confused, I think.
You actually mentioned something earlier that's kind of, it's making me nuts now. There are two songs in particular that one of them I bought from iTunes and was amazed to find that it had changed. If you listen to Run, I'm a Natural Disaster by CeeLo Green. What's his band? The album was Saint Elsewhere. Gnarls Barkley. Mm-hmm. If you listen to Run, I'm a Natural Disaster by Gnarls Barkley, it's a different version now than it used to be. And no, I didn't back it up. So
yeah,
my iTunes matches. But then the other one is, I actually had one of the first ever Letters to Cleo CDs, like back when Letters to Cleo was performing, like, you know, festivals in Boston. If you wanted the lyrics to their album, you actually wrote to them and they sent you like a Xeroxed piece of paper.
Right.
And a couple of those, they went back and once they got a label, they went back and re-recorded a lot of those tracks.
Yep.
And I've since lost that CD, lost a whole bunch of like 20 CDs, but they were my favorite 20 CDs and they were all in the same thing and they're gone now.
Right.
And so a lot of those original Letters to Cleo recordings, you can't get anymore. And I know people are sitting there going, Letters to Cleo, man, I haven't thought about them since the first Bush administration, and why are you even talking about it? But still, yeah, there are a couple of songs that it feels like I'll probably never get back, because somewhere along the way, somebody was like, that's not the best version. Here, listen to this one.
Yeah, I have a Big Bad Voodoo Daddy CD that's like that I ripped their original, you know, and they, I don't even think it had a title. I think it was just the thing that they sold at their shows.
Yeah.
And then when they recorded their first album, it's the same track list. So it's not the same, right? It's not.
Right.
It's a little
and
bit
I,
off.
And I guess I would say anybody out there listening that's got tracks like that right now, you should absolutely get those out of iTunes and have copies of them somewhere. I mean, right. If it's the digital
what
data.
What sucks, though, is you don't even know that they're that they're tracks like that until suddenly they're tracks like that.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I had Aurora Borealis. That's it. And there's the album Aurora Borealis. So I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Well, there's the album. And it turns out Kay Hanley sounds different.
And also for those that are backing up music, I know that a method that I use, a lot of us, you know, back up our Mac every day, and that's where the music's located. But wherever your music is located, I suggest kind of a double method. One method that backs up maybe only once a month to a certain location, and then the other one that maybe backs up every other day or whatever you're using. That way, if something does happen, you can go back a little bit in time and recover from a place that you knew to be good, because it's not good, you know, just back up every day. And then if you don't discover that something is wrong until 3 days from now, mm-hmm. the backup that you go to has the same issue. So stagger your backup links in a situation like this with a library.
Yeah. One trick I can give you that I use is one of my backup methods for my iTunes library specifically is I use ChronoSync, syncing
too.
To a Drobo. And when you set up ChronoSync, one option that you can do is when you sync from one source to another, you can tell it not to synchronize deletions.
Right.
So I have my iTunes library set up that way. So it will sync everything except when you delete. And what that means is if I delete something in the backup, it's going to keep that copy of that deleted thing. So I can always then go back. So even if I accidentally remove something from my music library and don't realize till, you know, months later, it will never have been deleted from my backup. So it's not a true 100% sync. It's a sync of everything except deletes. And that's actually worked out really well for me with if you've ever had, you know, an iOS app that got updated and for some reason the new version that came out had some horrible bug. Right?
Yes.
Because I auto-update my iTunes. Well, I can always go back to my ChronoSync backup, and I have the version just before that one because it was already there, and so I can reload that and get the old version back, which is really you can't, because you can't pull down old versions from the App Store. So
that's one of the first things I did when all this started hitting the press about there being problems with this mix is I immediately went to my Drobo copy and made like an extra copy of it, you know,
right.
Because you just never know.
Yeah.
But, well, let's talk more, you know, in terms of the service itself though.
Yeah.
I mean, how has it changed anything for you, Adam? I mean, we haven't really heard from you about it.
For me, I'm listening to a lot more music for sure. Absolutely. And it's definitely expanding my repertoire of especially new stuff. You know, I think that's probably the biggest thing for me is the discovery is great. And the For You is got a lot of older stuff that I, you know, like, and I'm, you know, I'm getting a lot of stuff from the 70s, 80s and stuff that I grew up with. But then I'm also getting this nice mix of sort of new stuff, mainly through using the other sections of the library, which is the new section and the activity and editor and curator playlists. I've been exploring those a lot more. And then just the new music, you know, sort of top songs and things like that, along with Beats One. I'm like you, Ken. I'll go for a couple of days kind of messing around, listening to Beats One, and then I'll go off and, you know, mess around with playlists a little bit, and then I'll kind of come back to Beats One. Mm-hmm. Beats One is amazing for how eclectic it is. So I mentioned earlier, you know, some of those other services where you start messing with the favorites and then you get these real eclectic playlists where it's like, why is this song with that song?
Right.
and it doesn't make sense. And I like Beats One Radio for that aspect of it, because it's like I can pop it on and, you know, they'll be playing some, you know, new pop song, and then it's followed up by some old school rap, and then that's followed up by some, you know, hair band heavy metal stuff. I mean, it's really weird, but it's really actually kind of cool too, because the stuff that the DJs pick is often, you know, very, it's not, you know, sometimes it's the top chart hit and sometimes it's really deep cut stuff. So, and I actually more enjoy the deep cut stuff more often because it's like, oh, I never heard that from that band, and that's really cool. And then I'll go back and sort of check that out, and maybe even, like you said, Ken, you make a radio station from that and find some more things. So, yeah, I mean, more than any other service. And I had Spotify, and I had tried Beats, and I tried to do the music discovery on both those services, and for whatever reason, they didn't click with me. And I think what didn't click, or what put Apple Music over the top, is because I think I would still discover stuff over there. But again, it was a little bit more hit and miss. With Apple Music, I seem to be getting more relevant, more consistent suggestions. But not only that, the ability to mix that in with my library and have everything sort of be on an equal playing field over in the My Music section, right? It doesn't matter where that came from, whether it was something that was iTunes matched or it was Apple Music or something from my library. I can now take all that and blend that together seamlessly. And I don't have to, like Ken, you said, I think, at the beginning, you don't have to remember, oh, that's over on, yeah, I have that over in that playlist on Spotify. Oh, that playlist that I want to listen to is over in my Apple Music, you know, in my iTunes playlist. The fact that it's integrated, I think, is really the killer feature of Apple Music.
And I want to say that Spotify tried to do that with their desktop client as well, but you still had to do it.
Yeah.
And that's a huge difference. And it's not that we're lazy, although we are. Not just that we're lazy, but I mean, if it happens automatically, convenient. Then it happens automatically. It's just, it's magic, as some tech company, or magical or something, as some tech company might say.
Yeah, so the radio and news sections, I'm using a lot more than I thought I was going to use those sections. I thought, at least when I first started using it, I was really only messing around with the For You stuff. But once I started to explore the new and the radio a bit more, I'm finding more and more discovery there as well, so...
It hasn't quite become a thing for me, though, where I know when what is happening. Like, I know now that, I guess it's Ebro is on in the afternoon where I am.
Yep.
And I know that because mostly that's when I listen. And honestly, I like Ebro, and I even like some of the music that he's playing. I'm sick of the Five Boroughs thing. I'm sorry I don't live in New York, okay? I'm sorry I don't live in New York City, but I don't live in New York City. I haven't listened to everybody else enough to know whether they're all like, oh yeah, LA, hey Beverly Hills, how's it going? Hey, you know, other place near Beverly Hills, how's it going? I get a little bit tired of the I am where it's cool thing. And I guess, but I do like, I kind of wish they would drop the geography just a tiny bit. And I understand hitting it because you've got London, you've got LA, you've got New York. I mean, you've got, you know, these centers of the world, except I'm not there. And so, I mean, I kind of wish Beats 1 was the center of the world instead of, you know, the particular city that they're in. Nah. On the other hand, I mean, maybe that's just my own personal stuff because I used to live in San Francisco and now I don't. I don't know. It is kind of weird, though. I mean, what you were saying, it's very eclectic. I mean, Ebro tends to be one kind of music.
Right.
When he plays, it's a very... I don't even want to say that, though, necessarily, because you go in and sometimes you'll be listening to The Weeknd and other times you'll go in and you'll be listening to Leon Bridges. And even though they're both current musicians, they're very different styles of music. I was out, I guess, one morning and I had a really weird mix of the song, I want to say the song Shut Up and Dance With Me was on, which is a very sort of poppy song. And then it went into Muse, which is, I guess, borderline metal. And then it went into a third thing that still, I mean, I never would have thought to put them on a playlist. And yet, I mean, it's almost like I hit the discoverability hour. I mean, it's like somebody threw everything into a hopper and just, you know, let it all land where it was going to, which I'm sure it was not anything like that random. And it's Beats 1. The other thing that's fascinating, though, is there are so many people who say they hate DJs. There are so many people who say they hate, like, you know, all the talk. They just want to hear the music. But I think what they really hate is the commercials. Because, I mean, there is something about having somebody talk to you about the music. And of course, you know, four podcasters sitting here, we might be interested in hearing what the people who broadcast have to say. That's been kind of an interesting thing, though. There are people who are really turned on by Beats 1, it seems, who have not been turned on by radio for a very long time. And I don't know if that's because radio has sort of, like, you know, aimed itself at the lowest common denominator, or if it's because, you know, the talking on radio is invariably going to be interrupted by 5 minutes of commercials, or what that is. But yeah, even for like the idea of radio seems to be an exciting thing again. I'm really looking forward to Beats 2 and Beats 3.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ken, I was going to say a couple of things. First of all, there is an if then then that script. It's kind of eclectic. What it does is it takes all of the music that Beats 1 has played. Mm-hmm. And if you have Google Drive, you can enable that script. It'll give you a Excel spread with everything they played. So if you want to get deep in the weeds, you can. That's one way of going about doing that. And then on your second comment, Beats 2, et cetera. Yeah, I hope they really do that. I would love to see them do a Beats 2 that was jazz related or classical with that DJ live thing. I think you're right on the button there. And that's going to be the kind of thing that may compel me in the future to change my mind, or at least to buy the music. You know, if I'm having the music presented, or if I have an interview with Pat Metheny, hey, that may compel me to go in and discover some music because of that conversation, not just because of the music. So I think there's a lot of value and goodness in having that stereo FM DJ thing back.
Yeah. Ken, another trick or tip that I wanted to throw out in case people don't know this, and I don't know if you know this as well, because you mentioned the whole, you know, you listen at a certain time, right? And it's like Radio Ebro happens to be on. Two shows that I really have liked are St. Vincent's Mixtape Delivery Service. I don't even remember when that one's on. And also The Alligator Hour.
Okay.
With Joshua Homme, I think is how you pronounce his name, H-O-M-M-E. And I don't know when those are on, but a lot of the shows have playlists. And it's basically, I think, their track list for that week. I don't know how long they're around for. They're somewhat hard to find. The only way I know how to find them is on iOS. You know, you go to Beats, and if you tap on the like Beats One logo at the top, you get the show schedule, right? That comes up.
Yeah.
If you scroll down, they have this featured shows section, and you can tap on the show and then get access to the playlists.
So are they just giving you the playlist, or can you actually listen to the show as a show?
No, I don't think it's the show as a show. It's just the playlist. But you still get the music that they played. Yeah. So you still get the discovery part of it. And I'm finding some cool stuff that way. You can also connect from there, too, and, like, follow them. You know, so you can follow the sort of show as well as, you know, like, following an artist. And I tried that for a little bit, but that didn't work out really well for me. But they do post those playlists. If you're following them on Connect, they'll post those playlists as well.
See, that's interesting. I wish I could hear, like, the actual show. Clayton Morris told me about something that I wish I had heard. And it was one of Ebro's hours where he was playing all of this old, like, I don't even know what to call the genre, unfortunately, because it's not mine. But he was playing like a bunch of old Otis Redding and maybe some Marvin Gaye, and I can't think of what else. But I mean, basically a bunch of like older songs that people might not give a listen today. And he got to the end of the hour, and he said, or end of the half hour, however long it took to do it, he said, now all of this music has been building up to this. And then he played Leon Bridges, who is recording stuff that sounds like it might have come out of, you know, late 60s, early 70s, but it's happening today. And it's sort of that's sort of being taken by the hand thing. I mean, yeah, you can play a bunch of songs and that's great. But I like the idea of somebody, you know, telling me a story about it and telling me why I care. And again, not to bash him so much, but I've been a radio guy for, you know, interested in radio. I used to be on tiny little stations, but I mean, I've been interested in radio for a very long time. Ebro almost feels like too inside baseball for me. It almost feels like I have to know what he's talking about. I don't feel like I'm sort of being brought in. I sort of feel like I wandered up at a party, you know, to somebody else's conversation. At the same time, I wish I had caught that hour or that half hour, because according to Clayton, it was absolutely phenomenal. The way he did, you know, lead people to this sort of crescendo moment.
Yeah. Well, I want to move us back to a direction that I want personally to go to, and that's back to you, David, because, you know, I have kids and I have my family, and we all sort of share an iTunes account. And I've, you know, way back when I was thinking about doing the whole family share thing, but we had a conversation, and I even had you on the show to talk about it. Where you tried it out and you ended up leaving it because it was a bag of hurt, I think, at the time for you. Now with Apple Music, if you want to have, you know, they have the family plan, and I'm very interested in that. But one of the requirements is, oh, you got to go turn on family sharing. So I've been nervous to do it or not want to do it. But I think I pinged you to say, hey, what'd you do? And you told me you're back. you're back with it, and it went more smoothly this time?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we tried Family Share at the beginning because we've always had this problem with too many devices. I mean, Apple with iTunes Match gives you 10 devices. Well, if you've got a family of four and everybody has a Mac and a phone, and maybe a few people have iPads, pretty quickly you can run out of devices, and right. then that causes all sorts of mayhem. So I thought that would solve the problem, and frankly, I just like the idea of everybody having their own library. So my right. recommendations are more about me than whatever my daughter's listening to.
That's
so,
the problem I'm having now. My daughter creates radio stations, and then I get all kinds of interesting radio stations that I'm not really interested in.
Yeah, yeah. And that will affect the For You recommendations, as far as I can tell. But anyway, so
I just had an epiphany. My daughter likes country music, so maybe that's why I'm getting country.
that could be it. So the first time I did it, and my family has always been kind of like, they'll go with the flow. They know that dad's a geek and I'm going to try stuff, and occasionally it causes some grief, but in general, they just go with it. They were ready to just come after me with pitchforks the right. first time we tried iTunes Match. I mean, their apps would not update on their phones. I mean, just like, it wasn't so much that the problems with the service, like, you know, you have to buy in-app updates again and things like that. I mean, none of that was really the big problem. The big problem was it just didn't work, and it actually made the experience much worse for them. So last year we tried it. We went back to all sharing one account. Well, when this came out, I said, look, we can, you know, the upside is you can download pretty much anything on iTunes and play it on your device. The downside is we have to try family sharing again. Are you guys in or are you out? You know?
Right.
And they said, let's try it. So we did, and we haven't had the same problems. I mean, the apps are updating. The phones are generally working. It's still a learning curve, coming from the place of where we were before, where we all have the same library. So it's right. very easy to get to your stuff. Now you need to understand how on the Mac or the iOS devices to get to somebody else's library when you want to share something. We just had this the other day. One of my daughter wanted to watch one of the Avengers movies, but it was on my account, and she didn't understand why isn't it on my account, and I had to go in and show her how to access it, and then she was fine.
So you can cross accounts like that?
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole idea of family sharing. So long as we're all on the same credit card.
So do you have to go in to purchase music and then add it to her library? Is that sort of the process?
Or what she did is she goes in and purchased.
Right.
And then there's a drop down and every member of the family shows up there. And she went to me and then to the movies, and you saw my movies, and she could play it. I think she even imported it into her library. I'll have to go back and check how she did it. But so you can even share it into your library, but that as soon as she gets on her own credit card, she is going to lose access to the right. stuff that has been shared across.
Sure.
But, you know, at this point, you know, that's years away, and why not start building your own library stuff right now? So overall, I give it, I guess, one thumb up. You know, I mean, yeah. it's still some issue of getting it sorted out.
Hopefully they'll have some sort of way, you know, in the future for, you know, like your kids to take their music back into their own iTunes account, you know, like all the stuff that you bought for them, so you could sort of gift it out of your library and say, I want to give this to, you know.
Well, music I could do that with, because music is DRM free. Right. I could just
But I'm one of the movies and TV shows, I'm hoping, you know, yeah. maybe by the time you know
yeah.
that oh, you're, go ahead. You're to
give
that
him,
point
give him the never gonna happen go ahead David give him the never gonna happen
no I, well I don't know I mean I that I don't know, but I'm saying when you say all music, that's where I'm like, no, that's never gonna be all music. There's always gonna be somebody that doesn't want their stuff there, but you know, just
okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's leading us to where I want to sort of finish up, which is sort of concepts for the future. But just David finishing up the whole family sharing thing. So the family sharing is working. The other question I had, though, was, I know one thing. How are you dealing with iTunes Match, right? Because you have to have once you move to family sharing, each person has to have their own iTunes Match if they want iTunes Match. Maybe you don't even need it with Apple Music. I don't know.
Well, that's one of the interesting points. So I talked earlier about how I make copies of my library. And one of the things I did is I have this little portable drive with all of our music on it. And right. I went to my daughter and my wife, and I said, okay, so, you know, do you want me to copy on the music that, like, there's some artists that I know are my daughter's artists. You want me to copy that in? And she said, yeah, let's do that. And then I got busy. A week or two goes by. I said, hey, we still haven't done that yet. And she says, well, I don't need it anymore. I just went and downloaded it all again through Apple Music.
Right.
So
they're fine with the DRM because they have all Apple devices anyway, right? So they're
Yeah, so and that happened with my wife too. So, you know, it's one of those cases where not doing something saves you the job. Right. But it's working fine for them, and I'm not aware yet. I'm sure they'll probably run into some tracks that they can't find that they may want, and in that case, we'll just copy them on.
The uploaded non-matched stuff. Yeah,
but so to answer your question, they don't need iTunes Match because they're not even using really our own music. They're just kind of building. They've rebuilt their libraries.
You may get me down a path where I'm going to probably get myself in trouble, but I think in the long run it's going to be better off because, the mixed library thing has gotten kind of old, and I think it's getting old for a lot of families. So it seems like we're close enough now to a system that might actually mostly work. It sounds like there's still one or two pain points, but it's probably not as bad as it used to be.
Well, your kids are getting older, and as your kids get older, it gets a lot harder.
The only other one that I know is going to be a big pain point for my family is the in-app, non-shared in-app purchases. Right? Because those aren't shared, so those have to be repurchased.
And you still run into the occasional app where the developer is elected not to make it family sharing friendly. Uh-huh. I forget what, there was an app we saw just even a couple of weeks ago. I forgot what it was, and they couldn't get it to work. And when we got to the bottom of it, it was the developer had opted out.
Yeah. All right. Well, so just finishing things up, I think, looking to, what's next? We all already kind of alluded to the, hey, it'd be great if there's a Beats 2 and Beats 3. Are there other things you guys are, now that you've had a chance to play around with Apple Music, that you're going, it'd be really great if it did, A, B, or C?
I had a connection problem, so you guys lost me for a little bit, but I feel like the whole mechanism of iTunes is creaky and needs a lot of work, and
almost separate from Apple Music though, right?
It is and it isn't, because like I've talked to some people, I'm talking to all my normal friends about, are you doing this and not, and some of them are loving it and some of them don't even know it exists because iTunes it doesn't make it that easy to figure out how to get it going and figure out, well, what's my music and what is the Apple Music and it's just because iTunes does so much. I feel like that there's, it's just so big. I don't know how they would fix it short of kind of going like iOS and having a music app and a videos app. And maybe that's the future of this. But it feels to me like that's something that needs to be addressed. Now that they've got the music service launched, they've got to make it easier.
Yeah. I mean, iTunes is just a bloated mess. It really is.
I have to say it out loud just so people hear me say it. I disagree.
Oh, really?
The amount of learning that you would have to do, the amount of where did this go, where did that go, the chance now that something else might end up being deleted. I mean, I think if you suddenly opened up El Capitan and there were five apps on your computer where there used to be one, the bloatware articles would be insane. Yeah. I mean, I don't. Victor wants to hide Kinect. I don't care about Kinect. I don't. Okay. Well, cool. Excellent. I don't see Kinect when it's up there because I don't look at it anymore. There's a lot of stuff that iTunes does that may make it buggy and stupid, but it's all stuff that I don't use. And I would rather have iTunes stay as it is and know if I want to find a movie, I go to iTunes and I hit the little movie icon. If I want to find a TV show, I go to iTunes and I find that. If I want to find music, I go to iTunes and I find that. I go one place. If I want to find an app and for some reason I'm not on my iOS device, if I want to find an app and I want to buy it on my computer, I go to iTunes and do that. I like the fact that there's one door that I go to. iTunes is a mall. Now, unfortunately, it's also a media management tool. And for that, it can be a bit buggy sometimes, but I know the bugs. I mean, GarageBand is an easier app in which to edit than Adobe Audition is, except I've been using Adobe Audition since it was called Cool Edit, before it was even Cool Edit Pro back in 98. It's what I know. And so nothing's ever going to be as easy for that, even though other people look at it and they freak out because there's too much and there are too many things and I don't use that and I don't use that. Why don't use those things either? It doesn't matter. It's what I know how to do. And that's sort of where I am with iTunes. When everybody says they need to fix iTunes, my first question is always, how? And the problem is I've not heard anybody, and if you've got one, David, or if we want to do this another time, in fact, maybe we should do this another time.
We probably need to come back and do a whole iTunes is broken or not broken show. We could do a whole hour on that easy.
So sorry, I everybody, almost everybody I know says the exact same things that you guys just said. And I got to say, from my simple, dumb, I'm just a simple caveman kind of brain, I like iTunes the way it is because I don't have to learn anything to do everything that I want to do. Yeah. It's already there. And the idea of spending a month or two having to relearn how to play my freaking music is not appealing.
So let's bring it back to Apple Music. Is there something you're looking forward to as Apple expands or adds on to the service or changes the service or tweaks the service?
No, there's no particular thing. I mean, yes, there is one thing. I want drag and drop functionality on playlist creation. That was something that Spotify had. That's incredibly easy. And I like the fact that if I'm looking at a song, why can't I just, you know, HTML5, whatever it's built on, why can't I just drag the title into a playlist that already exists as opposed to...
In the My Music library?
Playlists? Yes, exactly. Why can't I do that? That's been the one thing. And that's probably one of the biggest hindrances to why I haven't made more playlists. That and the fact that I'm enjoying all the music discoverability that comes with the radio stuff. Well, if there's a feature they need to fix, I would say that's a feature they need to fix just because as a Spotify user for the past 4 years,
right?
I mean, making a playlist in Spotify, at least on the desktop, is cake. And making a playlist here is not, it's more like pie.
So I don't even know how you do it. So to build a playlist with Apple Music, you have to first add it to your library, right?
I'm trying to remember. I want to say it's like a 2 or 3 step process. So you add it, and I think your choice is to either add it to your library or add it to a playlist.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You have to scroll through all of your playlists and pick which playlist you want. And the problem is I've never counted, but I've got to have somewhere between 60 and 100 playlists.
Yeah, and they don't.
Having to go through all of them to put it where I want to put it. Yeah, it's just kind of a
pain. They don't auto expand the levels either, which is really weird. So you have to click and then go to add to and click. And then find the playlist and click, you know, it's like click, click, click.
Yeah, but one assumes that that's something that will be fixed, I mean, fairly easily. I mean, drag and drop functionality, I would think, would be like one of the first things that has to change.
I would add to that I think they need to make sharing playlists easier because I feel like, you know, when you're going through and you're enjoying the stuff and starting to put together playlists, I do these things on my website called Jazz Friday occasionally where I pick a song and then now I'm trying to share playlists. From Apple Music, and it's just not trivial to do that, and it should be. And frankly, finding playlists created by other users is not easy either. That piece of it, I think, could get better.
So how do you share a playlist?
You know, I have to go back and look at my notes, which tells you how bad it is. I ended up doing it from the phone. And that's when I was able to make it a public playlist. But I never did get it working from the Mac as a public playlist. And I don't know. I just think the whole sharing element of this is something. And I get that, you know, hey, you have professionals putting together these lists of music. But, you know, users are going to want to share their playlist too. And right now it's just not very easy to create or easy to find.
On the desktop. It looks like that little sharing icon comes up and it'll let you either copy the link, email it, drop it into messages, post it on Twitter, or surprisingly post it on Facebook, a tiny bit surprisingly anyway. So we could try that and see.
What?
Huh?
Say that again?
On the desktop.
Right.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Ken.
On the desktop, if you hit that little thing, you know, with the square with the little arrow pushing up, which is the sort of the share icon, right?
Yeah.
You can copy the link, which I guess then you can go to Twitter and just post the link there. Or there's also an option for sharing it on Twitter and then email messages and Facebook as well. So, I mean, theoretically, that ought to work, but I haven't tried it.
Yeah, well, when I did it, the problem was it said that was a non-public sharing list. And then
that's what I was wondering.
I had to go onto my phone to make it public. And this was a couple of weeks ago. And sadly, I am old and forgetful. I don't remember exactly the steps I took. I should look into it again. But I haven't done it enough that I have it down. Yeah. And the fact that I have to think about writing it down tells me that it could probably be better.
I just tried what you said, Ken, and that seemed to have worked. I don't know. Hmm. So I went into playlists in, you know, iTunes, selected a playlist, and click the little share button, said copy link, and I just pasted the link into Safari, and it seemed to have worked. So,
all right,
showed the playlist in iTunes under new, I think, and it said bye.
I went to Apple. If I went to Apple Music and said, I want to see Adam Christensen's playlists.
No, you can't do that. I don't think, can you? Maybe you can. Can you do that? I didn't even know. Is that a feature in Apple Music?
Not that I've seen.
I'd have to send you the link. Like, I could probably send you guys the link in our Skype chat.
Then what you could do is you could actually post it on Twitter, and then your thousands of followers would be able to click on it. I mean, they've kind of left. I mean, it's sort of like what happened with, it's going to sound terrible. It's sort of like what happened with podcasts, right? I mean, they sort of like, okay, so here's all this stuff. And yes, you can make playlists. And no, we're not actually going to promote it for you unless you happen to be lucky enough as far as podcast goes. With both you and I, Adam, have been. So I'm not complaining about that. But my point is, it's sort of like, okay, well, if you have your own following, like you have thousands of people on Twitter, you can then post to those thousands of people. But it's not going to be like the easiest thing in the world. That's sort of where the mall analogy falls apart. You can't just walk into the mall that is iTunes and say, "Oh, show me something in the Adam Christensen line."
Right.
And as far as the music goes, they'd pretty much have to be on your mailing list or on your Twitter feed.
Yeah, yeah. You have to know kind of the secret link, like the link I dropped a link into our Skype chat.
Oh, cool.
For that. Well, it's not a great playlist. It's just I don't make playlists, so it was something I had.
Right.
It's kids' music, so you probably don't want it. But
no, I'm good. Thank you very much.
But I'd like to get some of yours, Dave's.
Yeah. But we'd have to share them, you know, and maybe it's interesting. I'm half wondering, somebody's probably already set up a website for socially sharing your playlist link. So you could create a profile and here's all my shared Apple playlists. So then you could follow me. But Apple should have that feature built in. I mean, that should be a feature. I should be able to follow you, David, and Ken, like on Spotify and say, you know, and maybe that's too painful for Apple. Maybe that's getting too close to moving back to Ping.
I was going
to
say, you say like on Spotify, but I was going to say like on Ping. Yeah.
Right.
I'll follow Adam.
Well, and that's the other thing I wanted to comment real just briefly on Connect. I mean, we kind of only skimmed Connect. I've found Connect has been a total failure for me because any of the artists that I follow aren't publishing anything. Like, literally, the only thing I'm looking in my feed now, the only thing that I have in my Connect feed is stuff from Apple Music Alternative.
You know, my Connect synopsis is, like, very, very short. Artists already have plenty of ways through social media outlets to connect with their fans. Why and what is going to impel them to use this as a method?
Well, I was hoping that Apple's back end, because it can cross-post to Twitter and Facebook and all those sorts of things. If Apple can really convince them and somehow incentivize artists to use their thing, and if they have to pay them, maybe they have to pay them. But I think it could be very beneficial for Apple and for Apple Music if they can figure out how to crack that nut. But as of right now, my guess is they haven't, because artists don't appear to be using it in any kind of, I mean, they did for like the first week, and I haven't seen anything since the first week. Like, even Trent Reznor, I think, was posting stuff on there, and he hasn't posted anything.
Where I do see value is in Connect and the DJs that are sharing stuff in Connect. I think following them in Connect, there's some goodness there.
Yeah, I was following them, and that just got annoying because, again, it was just like the only thing I was seeing in my Connect feed. And it's like, I'd really like to see some things from the artists that I like. You know, but the fact that it's not there is going to make people not want to go. So I think Apple has a chicken and an egg problem with Connect right now that they're going to have to resolve. So, you know, for future versions, that's one thing I think I'd like to see Apple do, because I think when there was stuff being posted there from some artists, the stuff that I saw was kind of interesting, you know, and it'd be great if they are working on studio albums and they really use it in the way sort of Apple described it, to say, you know, little private messages or videos from, you know, as they're recording, or posting lyrics of stuff that they're working on, sort of giving fans a little back end insight into what they're doing. But I think you're right, Victor. They've already got those people on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or these other places. So, you know, what can get them to use Connect? And I think Apple really needs to figure that out. So, we got anything else, or are we ready to wrap this puppy up?
Not too tightly, though, because puppies are weak.
You know, I'm just really happy we've got it. I know it took too long to get here, but, you know, combining my library and streaming is great. And I'm so happy to pay $15 a month so my family can just listen to whatever they want. It's been really fun for us already.
Yeah. My synopsis is I really have been enjoying it more than the other services that I tried. And I really think, though, it's because of the integration. And, you know, I granted, I know that for me, I'm so ingrained in the Apple ecosystem that it makes a lot of sense. And I think for people who are, it does. I get that maybe on other platforms. It's going to be interesting to see what happens when they release it for Android and what the reaction over on that side is.
I'll say it's been great to see Spotify step up. I don't know that it's going to keep me there, but ahead of Apple launching Apple Music, of course, Spotify added podcasts, a small number, a relatively small number compared to the number of podcasts out there, but one imagines that they're going to add more and more and more. They've also got that like run thing that they do now, and they've actually started their own. It's still not a human-curated playlist, but it's interesting what they're doing. They're looking at your musical tastes. And then from that, they're going into the Spotify library and pulling out and making a playlist for you once a week. But the playlist they're making for you is music that they think you'll like, but it's music that you've never listened to on Spotify before.
Right.
And I don't even know how that, I hear it's pretty good, but what's most interesting to me is Spotify is not just, you know, doubling down on, well, we've got all these listeners and we have your Facebook friends. I mean, Spotify in the past 3 months, what is that? Like, or 2 months, I guess. That's three different features that I can tell you about right now that Spotify has said, oh, Apple's coming. Why don't we step up our game a bit? And I like the fact they're doing that. Yeah. I don't know if it's going to help them. I don't know who's going to win in the end or if it's going to be a binary thing. Maybe they were both fantastic services that continue. But I like the fact that as a result of this, Spotify has actually turned into a better service.
Yeah. I think the thing I'm hearing from people in my community are that, you know, I think there's going to be lots of winners here. I don't think it's going to be the kind of thing where Apple has to win and Spotify has to lose necessarily, or even Ardio. I mean, Ardio is still out there as well, and a lot of people really like Ardio. So I hear from people like, I tried Apple Music, it's not for me. You know, it's sort of like the thing you were talking about, Victor. You tried Apple Music, it's not for you for whatever reason. You know, music services, it sounds like, are just not a thing that's really high on your priority list. And I think some people, you know, a certain music service sort of clicks and makes sense for them. I know people who love Pandora. I mean, you talked about that, Ken, and they'll probably never leave Pandora. They're happy to just use that. So I think it's great that we have choice and that people can sort of pick and choose. And I think there's going to be a lot of, you know, different services that are all, you know, winning in their own way. I think it's if they're being smart about it, and I think Spotify's being really smart about it, is like they're understanding their audience and they're trying to give the features and services that they think the people that or their customers want and need and will keep them. And I think that's the smart way to go, to not, you know, just do a bunch of Me Too stuff and copying. So it's great to see them doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, cool. Thanks, guys, for hanging out and talking about Apple Music for a little bit. I'm going to go in reverse order as we take everybody out. So, Victor, you want to tell people sort of what you're up to and where they can find you and all that sort of thing?
Sure. Happy to do that. You can find me podcast-wise at articulate.info. I do a show with George Starcher once a month, and it's George and I kind of catching up, and you're kind of listening to the conversation, and hopefully we geek out on all kinds of stuff, definitely not just Apple. You can also find me on Twitter at VICTORCHAIAO.
Cool. Thanks, Victor. And Ken?
My pleasure.
The two things that I would want to let people know about right now are macOS Ken, which is a daily Apple news and news related to Apple news podcast celebrating a little over 9.5 years on the planet. Available online, of course, at macOSKen.com and also on iTunes, you know, where people find podcasts. And the other podcast has nothing to do with Apple at all. Mission Log, a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast where we are talking about Star Trek. Once a week, we talk about a Star Trek episode, and we're going in order. So if you've missed the first 2 years of the show, you've missed 5.5 seasons of Star Trek and a bunch of movies, but it's there and you can always catch up. We started with The Cage. We will finish with whatever is the last thing by the time we get to the end of our run. So you got a few more years of that from us, too. And you can find that online at missionlogpodcast.com or, again, on iTunes. Where quality podcasts are served.
Cool. Are you going to be in Vegas this year?
Oh, dude. Yes. I leave in a week. I leave a week from today. Yes, I'm going to be in Las Vegas. And you ask me to be there this year. I may be there from now on.
The Star Trek 2015 convention is in Vegas, August 6th through the 9th. So
yes, it is.
If you go and there, track down Ken and say hi.
It's like Macworld, but not, but sort of. Really, the big one, though, is next year, because next year is the 50th anniversary of Star Trek. There will, of course, also be the movie out, And yeah, 2016 in Vegas is going to be, I mean, every day in Vegas is off crazy, the hook, yeah. But 2016 in Vegas is going to be off the hook. So
cool. Well, thanks, Ken.
Thank
and,
you.
And David?
I would just endorse Mission Log. It's so good. If you guys have any interest in Star Trek, it's one of my favorite podcasts. So thanks, Ken, for doing that.
Wow.
For me, you can find me over at maxbarkey.com. That links to all the different things I do. And if you're really excited about podcasts, macpowerusers.com, where Katie Floyd and I talk about things. So
cool. Well, that's going to do it for Apple Music in this episode. Thanks for hanging out. Thanks, guys. There you go, Apple Music and the Amigos. I hope you enjoyed that episode. Of course, that's our opinions on Apple Music, but the MacCast is a community, as you know, and I want to get your opinion. What are your thoughts on Apple Music? Are you enjoying the service? Are you preferring some other service? What do you like? What you don't like? Give us some feedback. Shoot me an email. MacCast@gmail.com. With that is going to do it for the episode for this week. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank all of my show sponsors: Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disc Label, also Text Expander Touch for your iOS devices, along with PDF Pen for iPhone and iPad, as well as PDF Pen Scan Plus. You can get more information and details on all of their great software by going to smilesoftware.com/MacCast. Also, Gazelle. Gazelle is the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. You can find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple products are worth by going to gazelle.com. And TunnelBear. TunnelBear is a really simple VPN app to let you browse privately and get around blocked websites. Try it today by going to tunnelbear.com/MacCast. And a big thank you to all of my sponsors for their support of the show. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at CacheFly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They are at backbeatmedia.com. Please give me your feedback. Keep your emails, your audio comments coming. You can send those to maccast@gmail.com. You can also call in on the listener hotline. That number is 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IAM-9, and you can leave a voicemail there. You can also leave voicemail on Skype, and my Skype username is TheMacCast. If you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you can find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And while you're there, be sure to check out the forum at forum.maccast.com. And if you want to follow me online, if you want to see what's going on with me at Nerdtacular, a great way to do that is to follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/maccast. Or you can also check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast. And if you prefer Google Plus, we do have a Google Plus community. You can find that at google.com/plus, and that's the plus symbol, plus MacCast. And I look forward to seeing you online, but until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.